Hi, I'm Carl Azus. Welcome to a new show, a new week, and for many of us, a new civil time. Speaking of time, it has been 2 years since America started shutting down because of the coronavirus pandemic. In fact, it was on March 16th, 2020 that the U.S. government announced a 2-week plan to try to slow the spread of the disease. The shutdowns and stay-at-home orders that followed stretched for more than a month, but the disease itself continued to spread in waves in different times of the years afterward and at different levels of severity. COVID-19 was first identified in China in late 2019. By March of 2020, the World Health Organization had officially declared the disease a pandemic, meaning it had spread around the world. And even though that was still early days, the effects were rippling widely and quickly. Here's a clip that CNN 10 aired on March 13th, 2020. The U.S. Capitol is now closed to visitors. The Metropolitan Museum of Art has closed. The National Basketball League has suspended all of its games. The National Hockey League announced the same thing yesterday. Major League Baseball has suspended spring training. March Madness has been canceled. Disneyland is closed. Around the world, there have been cancellations and closures like these, sometimes including countries' borders, and international stock markets have seen dramatic swings and losses. Back and forth messages and mandates on masks, jobs lost and many regained, vaccines developed faster than any others in history, outbreaks and immunity, working from home and on the front lines, remote learning, controversies and consequences, supply chain disruptions and soaring inflation. The ripple effects of the pandemic continue to impact our lives today, even though the number of new COVID cases is either holding steady or falling in almost every U.S. state. Health experts don't know if another dangerous variant, another version of COVID, is on the horizon. The Omicron mutation that hit the U.S. late last year was less severe and deadly than previous waves of the disease, even though it was more contagious. Some doctors have suggested this might have signaled that the disease was turning a corner, that COVID-19 was becoming something milder like the cold or the flu that people live with. Time will tell if that's what's happening. People and nations are hopeful it is, and COVID restrictions are being lifted in countries around the world. By the end of this month, Hawaii will be the only U.S. state that still requires students to wear masks in class. That's been one controversial restriction of the COVID pandemic, just like the remote learning that became widespread when schools shut down. Differences in access, parents needed at home, lower test scores, impacts on students' mental health. These were some of the criticisms of distance learning, but it did allow students and teachers to still see and communicate with each other throughout the pandemic. And that's one thing that's currently helping Ukrainian teachers and students with their nation at war.
An all too familiar scene for parents who lived through the COVID pandemic.
Okay, зрозуміло. Ну, ще трішки.
Children fidgeting through a Zoom class about the solar system. The difference here, most of these Ukrainian school kids are refugees, reconnecting with their classmates and teacher online. In the last 2 weeks, the students and their teacher fled to different countries to escape Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
How old are your students?
7, 8.
From Poland, Nadia Pavlenka teaches her students online classes, even though the school stopped paying her salary.
Непонятно, що буде.
None of us know what will happen next, she says, but these classes with my children are like a bridge to my past life in Ukraine. They help us feel connected. Wartime distance learning. There's a lot of this going on right now.
Do you think the online classes are helping these kids?
Very much. It's helping them and mental health to feel their routine, that the life is still going on. That it's not the end of the world.
Alexander Parkalab is a school teacher who fled the Ukrainian city of Odessa to neighboring Moldova. In the morning, he teaches students from his Ukrainian school online.
Children ask me if I'm safe, where I am, with who I am. They were asking me before me asking them.
In the afternoon, he comes here, a makeshift school for Ukrainian children in the Moldovan capital. Half of his online students fled across borders. The other half are still in Ukraine.
The first lesson in Zoom, I said that you should be this first domino. to help somebody. Maybe your mother need help. Maybe mother's friends need help. And this is what can I do. I cannot change the world, but I can change me and change like the mood of my mother, and it will be like a domino.
These girls say they're looking forward to starting online classes with their Ukrainian classmates on Monday.
Lena says she wants to find out where her classmates traveled to and to make sure that they're healthy right now.
8-year-old Timur Zhdanov and his father Artem stayed behind in Ukraine.
Were you surprised when Timur's teacher said, hey, we're going to continue online learning?
Honestly, yeah. I think that they're feeling this strong connection with Ukraine and then want to support us as much as they can, and also a new generation of Ukrainian people.
A new generation that may grow up in exile, relying on technology to stay connected to their homeland.
10-second trivia. The Calder Act of 1918 was another name for what? Daylight Saving Time Act, Time Zone Establishment Act, Standard Time Act, or Hour Back and Forward Act? The law named for Senator William Calder established all of these things, but it was named the Standard Time Act. It's time to save daylight, y'all. I always notice a lot more negative news coverage of the time change in the spring when we lose an hour of sleep than in the fall when we get it back. Why does this tradition persist more than 100 years after it began?
So why don't we change the clocks ahead 1 hour in the spring and back 1 hour in the fall? Well, it's actually to reduce the electricity consumption by extending the daylight hours. In the U.S., we change our clocks at 2 a.m. on the second Sunday in March. That begins daylight saving time. That's when we spring ahead. On the first Sunday in November, we change our clocks at 2 a.m. again. That's actually just going back to standard time. Believe it or not, this started with an idea from Benjamin Franklin. Franklin did write an essay suggesting that people could use less candles if they got up early and made better use of daylight. In 1918, the Standard Time Act established time zones and daylight saving time, but not all states participate. To this day, most of Arizona and all of Hawaii do not change their clocks. Over 70 countries across the world observe daylight saving time, with notable exceptions of China and Japan. In 2007, we actually changed the date of when we set our clocks back an hour to the first week in November. This helped protect trick-or-treaters by giving them an extra hour of daylight. One of the other lines of thinking was that we would have a better voter turnout on election years. Experts say each time you change your clocks, it's always a good idea to change those batteries in your smoke detector, and always look forward to fall when you get that extra hour of sleep.
In 1914, the Anglo-Irish explorer Ernest Shackleton did not succeed in his expedition to cross Antarctica. His ship, the HMS Endurance, became trapped in and later crushed by the ice. Though Shackleton and all of his crew survived after a nearly 2-year ordeal, their ship was lost until now. Modern-day explorers just announced her discovery almost 2 miles deep near Antarctica's northern coast. The Endurance is incredibly well-preserved in the frigid waters, her name visible and legible, her wheel looking like it did in 1914, and she'll be photographed, mapped, and studied, but not moved from her final resting place. Sticking with the nautical theme, a Minnesota couple who love lighthouses decided to build their own in the middle of Minnesota. So no water anywhere around except for a small lake, but the view of the woods is said to be amazing. Took them 2 years to build this. It has 6 floors, bedrooms, bathrooms, a crow's nest that's 50 feet high, and while it won't save any ships, it is available for rent at about $300 a night. A good place to stay, guests say, is an oasis, a sight to see on a landlubber's basis. A delightful house illuminating renters' faces, a bright nautical light, and some unlikely places. Sailors may prefer the beach, but in others' cases, if you want something different for a change of paces, just sail through the woods with wakes of snow on your waces as you take the maritime to navigate from the rat races. I mean, why not? I'm Carl Azus. Shalik High School gets today's shout-out. Hello to you, our viewers in Pittsgrove, New Jersey, and thank you for your comment and your request on our YouTube channel.